This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. May is National Bike Month, and the Cincinnati area is full of cycling enthusiasts and opportunities, but local drivers may also have a lot to learn about sharing the road. How do you handle a situation when you're driving and you come upon someone on a bike? Do you give space? Meanwhile, our system of local bike trails continues to grow as well. So let's talk about all things biking with the director of Tri-State Trails, Wade Johnson. Welcome, Wade.
Hi.
Queen City Bikes, Katie Vogel. Welcome, Katie.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having us.
Cincinnati Off-Road Alliance President Doug McClintock. Welcome, Doug.
Thank you.
NWCPO Transportation Reporter Pat LaFleur. Welcome, Pat.
Hey, Michael. Thank you.
Questions or comments about today's show, 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at WVXU.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, and we will look for your comments and your tweets and try to get some of those in the show as well. So you're all here because it's National Bike Month. So I want to start by just getting perspective from each of you. And we'll start with Doug at the end and work our way over to Pat. Give me the lay of the land. What's working? What's not?
Well, I wear a bunch of different hats in the bike world, so I can tell you a couple things that are working in my world. I'm the operations manager for Red Bike by day, so I wear that hat sometimes. And Red Bike is really excited because we're getting ready to roll out e-bikes in the system, which is a great addition to that. So that is a really exciting thing we can talk about today, but we're all very excited about that. And then I'm also the president of Cincinnati Off-Road Alliance, and there's a lot of great things happening in the trail world. We just had a massive fundraiser and raised over $30,000 to finish the DeVue Park trail system, which we're very excited about, and it bodes well for the growth of trails long term here in natural surface world.
So we're going to talk more about Red Bike and the DeVue Park project coming up. Wade, what's your thoughts on just the general situation? What's good? What's not?
So we've got a really great trail system emerging in Greater Cincinnati. Tri-State Trail serves a 10-county region in the Tri-State. One of the big projects we've been working on is called the Crown, the Cincinnati Riding or Walking Network. It's a vision to create a 30-mile trail loop around the city that would link up the Wasson Way Trail, the Mill Creek Trail, and the Ohio River Trail to leverage the investment the city has already made and create a network so that it becomes more than just a recreation and exercise opportunity, but a transportation alternative for people to feel safe and not having to make the choice to drive.
Katie, your thoughts.
I think that we're really seeing an incredible resurgence of leadership, both on-road and off, for trails as well as on-street. And that is really what matters when you're talking about effective bicycling advocacy and effective bicycling infrastructure development, is whether or not the enthusiasm is there. And I think that Doug and Wade are both really excellent examples of that, as well as the way in which Queen City Bike is really redeveloping into a convening organization for all of the amazing energy that's coalescing around this.
And Pat, you've been on a bike a time or two.
Once or twice.
What are your thoughts?
So I would echo everything that the panelists have said already. And I would add that coinciding with this resurgence of attention paid to bicyclists, it's going hand in hand with all of the attention that pedestrian safety has been getting throughout the city and the region over the last several months. And I think when one of those items gets advanced, the other comes along with it just by default. So not everything's perfect yet, but both of those issues are definitely moving in the right direction.
So Cincinnati is seeing a lot of activity in terms of trail development, bike access, and even some opportunities for folks to learn about how to share the road. But what are some cities across the country that the Cincinnati area could learn from?
So I think that our strongest peer city is actually Pittsburgh, where you're looking at similar topography. Those hills are intense.
You're causing accidents right now by saying that while people are driving.
I know,
around.
Everyone, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It's going to be okay. So however much we may despise Pittsburgh in terms of our sports fandom, it's an incredible example of what happens when a city's political and social leadership gets together and says, bicycling is a way to transform our city and to make it more accessible and to make it more exciting and to make it more engaging for people as they go about their day-to-day lives.
In the Cincinnati region, we talk about generically, but it's pretty big. You know, you talked about a 30-mile loop, mm-hmm. right, around the region. But, you know, if you go from the northern edge, what we consider our metropolitan area, to the southern edge of it, it's a long drive. Which parts of the region here locally are doing better than others in terms of focusing on these issues?
So I think one really good example is Warren County. They are part of the Little Miami Scenic Trail, which is 80-mile trail that goes from Springfield, Ohio, down to Anderson Township, and is about to enter the city of Cincinnati when a bridge is built in 2021 to connect the trail to Lunkin. Mason has built a 30-mile trail network that connects to many of their residential areas and activity centers, and I think that when they connect to the Little Miami Trail, which will happen in 2022, that will be huge for making that area even more bike-friendly.
What's our biggest, most urgent need right now?
I think our biggest, most urgent need is really a connection from the byways, the larger trail networks that Wade's speaking about, to the rest of the amenities that exist, whether that's to a natural surface trail opportunity that may be a little bit more remote, or something like Mount Airy that's kind of close to the city. How do you get to those places and how do you get to destinations by using that trail network? We have to get into communities, like Wade said. You know, building those bridges to the larger arteries is really important for us.
And Pat, you're a commuter, right? You commute over to WCPO. We're neighbors in Covington, so you're riding across the bridge. I mean, from that perspective, what do you think is the most urgent need?
Well, I would add that we don't just need connections between the trails. We need then connection from the trails onto the city streets where there is actually infrastructure there. We have one example of a protected bike lane in the city. It's right outside this studio. And when I was on my way here, it was blocked by utility trucks. And that's a really common occurrence. So it's not just having the infrastructure, but also having the will from law enforcement to make sure that these pieces of infrastructure are used correctly.
We see that a lot with some of these alternative transportation situations. The streetcar fans often post on social media when that is blocked. So I imagine that's a common thing. 513-419-7100 is the number to call. If you have a question, we have Dick on the line. Hi, Dick.
Hi.
Hey.
My question is, I understand that bike riders have a right to the highway. Are there laws or protocols about what part of the highway they occupy? Can they ride in pairs or threes? Do they have a right to the middle of the road? Or should they be to the right of the road? I'd like to understand those rules.
Okay,
and I think for people of my generation, I'm a baby boomer.
I'm sorry, Dick, we were having some trouble with that connection, but I think I got the gist of your question. You're curious about what are the rules for bike riders on streets? Do they have to ride in a line when they're in groups to allow cars to pass, or can they ride side by side?
Yeah, so in Ohio and Kentucky, we have what's called the 3-foot passing law. Both of these bills were passed in the past year or two, and it requires that motorists pass bicyclists with at least 3 feet of space when driving in the road. And under Ohio law and Kentucky law, and Indiana law for that matter, riding a bike in the road is considered a vehicle. It's legal. We encourage bike riders to use the full lane in situations where there's two lanes so that cars can pass safely in the left-hand lane and bike riders can ride in a single file or two abreast. All of that is legal.
But what about when the two-lane road has the, you know, the double line where you're not supposed to pass?
That's a great question. I think there's a lot of confusion, which speaks to a larger need for better driver's education, starting when we're young. I mean, a lot of us here remember, like, what it meant to go to, like, safety town in preschool, right?
Do we?
Come on. That was, safety town was fantastic, guys. Come on.
I agree. Safety town, big fan.
Thank you, Doug. So it is legal to pass on a double yellow if you're overtaking a slower moving vehicle, such as a bicycle or a tractor or a buggy in Ohio. And I think that what is really required here, when we talk about confusion about what your role is as a bicyclist or as a driver, is to really approach this as like having a one-on-one conversation with people. It's so easy to dehumanize one another when we're on the roadway. And what we really need to be doing is taking just a brief moment and resetting our brains and saying, oh, that's a human being who has friends and family, and I need to approach this interaction with just a touch of compassion. And like, we can apply that to being stuck on I-75 in rush hour traffic too.
And that leads into my next question, because I recall when Red Bike launched, there was concern from people about seeing more bikes in the road, because that is the general rule. You're not supposed to ride them on sidewalks. You should be in the street. And we also had some controversy last year, and we'll talk more about this later, after a Facebook group was launched in the area that was critical of cyclists. So what resources are available to people who use cars and think, all right, I know I need to be better about my cycling neighbors, but where do I go to learn about how to handle this?
Yeah, there are some resources, and actually AAA has been a big partner in working to try to figure out how we can access this information and get this information to people in driver's education, or get this information to people in a way that impacts them when they first start taking those steps onto the road. And I think you'll see their investments in a lot of different places, especially with Bike Month and sponsoring things this year with Queen City Bike. They're committed to that because they understand that outage. So you can turn to AAA. They have a lot of those guidance. You can always call your DMV and find out. And then, you know, organizations like Katie heads up with Queen City Bike, you know, I think all of the cyclists really kind of, we pride ourselves on knowing this because we're out in the roadways.
Mm-hmm. I think one thing to add on that is that ODOT has been taking a different approach to this in the past couple years, where they're trying to be more accommodating for bicyclists when they're redesigning roadways and repaving. And that started with infrastructure, but it's also a part of a campaign called Your Move Ohio, where they've been trying to get the word out about, you know, making it safe for walkers and bicyclists and even bus riders, that motorists need to respect those users of the roadway.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now with our conversation about cycling in Cincinnati. May is National Bike Month. We are joined in the studio by the director of Tri-State Trails, Wade Johnson, Queen City Bikes, Katie Vogel, Cincinnati Off-Road Alliance President, Doug McClintock, and WCPO transportation reporter, Pat LaFleur. 513-419-7100 is the number to call. Let's go to the phone lines now. We have Raphael on the line. Hi, Raphael.
Hi, how are you?
We are very well. What's your question or comment?
Well, I have a comment. It's like I've seen here in Cincinnati, you know, we are putting a lot of resources in trails and commuting, but I used to be a competitive cyclist, and competitive cyclists cannot stay only in trails. They have to go to the road and, you know, look for hills and longer distances. And just a comment that I have seen drivers in Cincinnati, for the most part, very hostile towards cyclists. I've been insulted many times, and I am a very careful cyclist. And one of the routes that I used to take was Road 52 that takes you to New Richmond and Moscow. And recently, two cyclists were killed there by people hiding opioids. And it makes, I just stop riding. To me, it's very scary. And another thing that I haven't noticed is like a whole lot of education to the drivers, because many drivers think that we don't have the right to share the road, or we don't have the right to be in the road because we don't pay, anything like permits or fees or license plate or that. And that's a comment that I want to say.
Raphael, we appreciate the call very much. We'll hang up and allow the panel to address that. I mean, it sounds like Raphael has become scared of riding his bike. I mean, is that something that's common?
I think that is a common perception, unfortunately. I think that it's important to note that bicyclists are vulnerable road users the same way that pedestrians are. You know, in a fight with a car is going to win over a bicycle any day of the week, unfortunately. So I think that those fears are valid, and I think that we can't just gloss over it and be yay, rah-rah cheerleaders about bicycling, although that's necessary. When we look at the concerns that people have about being on the roadway as a bicyclist, it really needs to go hand-in-hand with driver education and with really strong advocacy for the rights and obligations of bicyclists.
When I did a little bit of reporting on driver's education this week and found that in the Ohio Driver's Manual, there is about a quarter of a page out of more than 80 pages devoted to concepts around sharing the road with other types of vehicles. So I think this piggybacks well on where the conversation was before on, like Katie said, just exactly how important reaching these people, these future drivers, as early as possible. And it could even go back even earlier and a person's life before they're old enough to own a driver's license. Most of us here probably were riding a bicycle before we were ever legally licensed to drive a car. So that seems to me a really good example of a level of engagement that we're not doing yet.
I think another important point here is the visibility of bicyclists in the roadway and signage for that matter. So with US 52, ODOT in the next year or two, when they repave that, there's going to be bike lanes on there with signage. And that is a direct response to the two fatalities that happened in that corridor. And, you know, the perception issue is definitely something that all the groups are kind of grappling with. And for Tri-State Trails, the way that that has influenced our work is we're really working to connect and expand the trails and protected bike lanes so that there is some type of physical separation from traffic. Bike lanes in the roadway are definitely an important piece of that puzzle to get you where places that you can't necessarily build a trail or a protected bike lane. But having that physical separation and being visible as cyclists is a great way for us to collectively show that you know, the roadway belongs to all users.
To that end, we got a comment from Joe. He called in and says that there's bike lanes, but there's always debris in them. So, I mean, is that a government responsibility to treat these bike lanes the same way they would treat the streets?
Absolutely. When you look at cities that are really doing high-level bicycle infrastructure, like Minneapolis and Chicago, there is routine street cleaning in protected bike lanes and in bike lanes at large. And that's just something that we really need to focus on as we build stronger relationships with our elected officials and build stronger relationships with our DOT.
In Minneapolis, they plow their trails for snow because people ride all year round. So, I mean, that's just an example of how sophisticated it is in other cities and, you know, to a certain extent, the catching up we need to do.
What do you think is the biggest misconception that vehicle drivers have when approaching a cyclist on the road?
Well, I would maybe venture that I have been personally, you know, scolded to get off the road. But I think the biggest misconception that occurs in those moments is that not just that the cyclist theoretically doesn't belong there, but that that cyclist, for a lot of cases, not all cases, but they've probably been doing this for at least some period of time and they're somewhat experienced with being on the road. If a cyclist isn't comfortable with riding on the road, they probably won't. They'll probably ride on the sidewalk, which is usually an indicator to me that this person might be new to this, or they don't have any other choice and this is the only option they have. But what I find is that it seems to me like I am perceived as someone who doesn't just belong there on the road, but doesn't know what I'm doing while I'm on the road as well.
Well, that's a common concern, especially with red bikes or touristy bikes, is what if you just want to take a leisurely ride on a bicycle while you're out visiting somewhere, but you don't know the rules of the road? You're still expected to be in the road.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing we try to combat at Red Bike, at least by signing our equipment very clearly, that you are supposed to ride in the roadway. That is your legal right and your responsibility. And, you know, that's been something that's been very interesting since the addition of Red Bike 5 years ago, is we've seen cyclists are far more visible in the downtown area than you would have seen, you know, a couple years ago. They have become, you know, instead of putting, you know, infrastructure in, we've put 440 bikes on the street. And now bikes have become part of that downtown landscape, and they've changed the way that people are behaving around bikes, at least in the downtown area. I think I'm feeling that visibly. Now, when you get out on the country roads, some of those situations can be a little more difficult, but it is certainly more common in downtown because just the preponderance of bikes on the street.
And Wade, you mentioned that organizations like ODOT, the State Transportation Department, is factoring in bike lanes when they plan new projects. But I wonder if at a more localized level on either side of the river or in Indiana, whether we're at a point where we need to talk about balancing the needs for both cars and bikes, or do we actually need to tip the scale even more in favor of the bikes after all these decades of car-first policy?
Well, I think what's interesting is that the way that our road network has developed as highways have come online is that some of our roads that were built in, you know, early 1900s or through the 50s have more capacity now than they originally were planned for. And so we have a lot more space in the roads like Central Parkway where we can come in and when the road is scheduled to be repaved, put in bike facilities that make it a lot more accessible. So I think, yes, there's definitely an opportunity. What you're describing sounds like a complete streets policy, which is where when a city is going through any type of road repaving, they look at the road and they say, can we fit other users into this roadway? And when they can, they do. So that's something that we want to advocate more actively for, is when we're repaving, it's really affordable to add bike lanes. It's really just paint. And that's how we can make our bike network more robust.
513-419-7100 is the number to call if you'd like to weigh in on the conversation. Let's go back to the phone lines. We have Tom on the line. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how are you?
We're doing very well. What's your question or comment?
I have a question. Blue Ash, Ohio has very wide sidewalks that they put in that are shared paths for bicycles and pedestrians. And bicyclists, a lot of them refuse to use the sidewalk. Are they legal to ride on the road, even though there's a designated path for them on a sidewalk? There's signs that say shared path, and it shows a bicycle as well as a pedestrian.
All right, Tom, we appreciate the question. We'll hang up and let the panel answer. That's his question, is if you see signage that says you can use the sidewalk, should you still be in the road?
Yes. So I think, once more, this is a place where there's a lot of misconception. And Tom, thank you for your question. Bicyclists are still legally able to be in the road. And what that shared path situation does is make it more possible for people with young families or children or people who might not feel really, really confident about riding in the street yet to be able to have a space that's safer. The same way in which you look at places that have really significant arterial bike and walking paths. So I think that comes back to, like, we just need to be a little bit gentler with one another and cut one another a little bit of slack and know that, like, bicycling can cause a little bit of a cognitive disconnect. If you aren't seeing bicyclists all the time, suddenly you see one in front of you and it's like, oh, what is this thing? And we want to think that they belong exclusively on paths and trails. But the reality is that we're all in a transportation ecosystem together.
513-419-7100. Next up is Larry. Hi, Larry.
Hi, how are you?
We're doing good. Well. What's your question or comment?
I'm on Wooster Pike six times a day, and there's a trail that runs parallel to it. And I've noticed that competitive bike riders will not use the trail. And I'm, you know, it's just, it, I wish they would. You know, they just, they don't want to go on those trails because there's people on the trails and they can't go as fast as they want to go.
People walking?
Well, yeah, there's everybody on the trails. There's pleasure bike riders, you know. So there's the competitive bike riders are going on the trail or on the road. And they won't use the trails, the ones that go into Newtown, you know, on Newtown Road and the ones on Wooster Pike. They just won't go on the trails.
All right, Larry, we appreciate your call and your comment. We'll let the gang weigh in. I love that today we've gotten calls from Tom, Dick, and Larry. That amuses me.
So with the trail, Little Miami Trail, following Wooster Road there, yes, we certainly do see people riding on the road. And I think that is because when that trail is so popular that, you know, they see over a million people a year on the trail. And what that looks like is that you've got people with strollers, you've got dogs, you've got pedestrians walking, and some folks who are riding bikes want to ride faster and not have that conflict with pedestrians. And furthermore, create a safe space for the pedestrians and slower moving bicyclists to ride on the trail. And so, like we have indicated, you know, it's legal to ride on the road, and there is an option for folks to ride on the trail if they so choose. But there's nothing that we can do as the cycling community to try to push people to the trail if they want to ride in the road.
Yeah, and as someone who does both of those things, there are times that I ride on the trail, and that is a time when I am trying to take it a slower pace and maybe not needing to put as much of an effort into an exercise event that I'm trying to do. There are other times I will ride on arterial roadways because it is the right thing to do. But I mean, as a cyclist, I'm taking that all into effect and saying, I don't want to be going 25 miles an hour on a path where there are children and dogs when I can safely and legally cycle in the street.
To me, this speaks a lot to, it speaks a lot to the general versatility of this type of vehicle, the bicycle. It can be used by such a wide variety of people of all ages, ability levels. And it would be a mistake, I think, to limit where that vehicle is allowed to ride or where it is not allowed to ride. One of its greatest virtues is that it can be ridden in very different ways. So it's important that the right to ride in the road is preserved, even if there is a trail nearby, I would say.
Absolutely.
Back to the phones we go. Next in line is Kirk. Hi, Kirk.
Hey, Long-time listener, first-time caller. I have waited all my life to say that.
And I've waited my whole life to be sitting in a chair to hear it. So this is a very exciting day for both of us, Kirk. Thank you.
It's a great day. It's a great day. Hey, I may have missed this, and maybe you've covered it, or some of your guests have covered it. I'm struck by the importance of bicyclists obeying the rules of the road. I mean, certainly it's important as a motorist for me to be aware of bicyclists and take care of them, frankly. But I can't tell you the number of times I've seen groups and individual bicyclists just running stop signs and ignoring the rules of the road. And I think they're required to obey the rules of the road, aren't they?
Kirk, we'll hang up and let the panel discuss, because I think stop signs are a very interesting question. Thanks so much for the call. And that's true. I think even when I was riding around on those red bikes, I may be confessing to breaking the law here, but I treated some of the stop signs like they were optional.
And we won't tell the cops. We won't let them know.
So this is something that we hear all the time in the advocacy universe. And yes, bicyclists are responsible for obeying the law and as traffic laws currently apply to them. And just because the way that the laws are written is not necessarily in the best interests of bicyclists at all times, doesn't mean that we get to opt out and behave badly. The other piece there is that, you know, once more, there are so many fewer bicyclists on roads that when you see someone misbehave, it grossly overrepresents that behavior in your mind. So it's very easy for automobile drivers to say, like, oh, all bicyclists are behaving really terribly, when we know for a fact that we see really bad behavior on I-75 and on arterial streets every single day of the week. So that goes back to the fact that we all need to take a deep breath and understand our rights and obligations, and that requires education for everyone.
And I think just one point to add to that is, fellow cyclists out there, you know, you do represent the bicycling community when you blow through a stop sign or a red light. And so please try to take a moment, you know, to think about how you do represent us all, and try to follow the rules.
I mean, the phones are blowing up. I haven't seen them blow up like this since we were talking about whether you're allowed to shoot a coyote, but we'll get back to some of those phone lines in just a moment. I do want to get those callers, but I want to make sure that we hit some of the ideas that we wanted to talk about for National Bike Month as well. What are some of the events going on locally?
The signature Bike Month event will take place next Friday, May 17th, 7 to 9 a.m., breakfast on the bridge.
All right, tone it down.
We refuse to tone it down. Yeah. It's that exciting.
It is a good event. It's very cool.
There's food there. That is important.
Free food.
And bacon and waffles. And all sorts of delicious
donuts.
Stuff.
Donuts.
And the Purple People Bridge is, and this word is, right? Purple People Bridge. Yes. It's very significant because it's like the only bridge in the area that is just for bikers and walkers. So an appropriate place to have that.
Yeah. And we have a trail monitoring program where we track data for the trails. The Purple People Bridge is the most highly used trail in the entire region. On any given day, you can anticipate about 2,000 people crossing that bridge. And that is significant.
Wow. And we have something going on almost every single day for Bike Month, which is really exciting. So us listing off a giant list of names and dates is not going to be super helpful.
We've got the comprehensive list at WVXU.org in the Cincinnati Edition segment right under here. I do want to give a shout out to the Ride of Silence on May 15th, remembering cyclists who have been killed or injured. That'll take place at 7 p.m. on May 15th. And where is the location of that?
That's at Lunken. Yeah, it'll be in the
there
Lunken.
There you go. Okay, that'll also be included on the list of events. And I want to make sure that we touch on Tri-State Trails Project recently launching Connect NKY. This was in response to that I Hate Cyclists Facebook group that was launched in Northern Kentucky. What is this project, Connect NKY?
So, like you mentioned, there was a Facebook group that came out late October or September last year. And the bicycling community, when we see this kind of outpouring of rage and hate, it's upsetting, and wanted to turn this negative into a positive. So Jason Reeser over at Reeser Bicycle Outfitters convened a meeting of a bunch of stakeholders in Northern Kentucky and said, what can we do about this? And where we ended up was we held an RFP earlier this year where we asked the Northern Kentucky communities, submit an idea to Tri-State Trails about how you want to improve your streets for bicycling. And we will pledge to do we'll select a winner, and we selected Newport, to do a test bike lane to give people an opportunity to interact with a bike lane before it's made permanent, so that we're kind of changing the public planning process here, working with a group called Yard & Company, who's been on the show previously talking about this. And so the idea is that we'll test a bike lane for a few days or a week, see how it goes, hopefully make it permanent after.
All right. And Doug, I want to make sure that we talk about the new additions coming to Red Bike. You mentioned e-bikes are on the way.
Yeah.
Does that mean it's going to be easier to ride the bikes?
Well, it's not. I mean, if you don't know how to ride a bike, you're going to have to still figure that piece out first. But e-bikes are e-assist bikes. So it's not a throttle bike. It's not a motorcycle. You have to pedal. And what it does is gives you a boost. And what that allows us to do is really change the way that people can get around Cincinnati. As you may know, we have hills, right? And it's kind of hard to get a 50-pound red bike from Vine Street all the way up Vine Street to the university and the medical corridor and campus where we do have stations. So what we're going to be able to do by adding these e-assist bikes is change that commute. We're going to be able to make that easier, and we're going to be able to help people go longer distances or just go shorter distances without as much effort. It is really a game changer, and we think it's kind of the game changer for this community when it comes to bike commuting in the basin.
I think that's going to be a game changer, because one thing that I noticed from not being a regular bike rider to kind of jumping on the bandwagon when Red Bike showed up was, yes, we have hills that are very significant and obvious, but you underestimate the grade of very slight hills. I rode across the 11th Street Bridge between Covington and Newport and had to stop. And you don't even think about it when you're in the car. This isn't a very significant hill, but that was deadly.
Yeah, this will lower that bar quite a bit.
Well, I like that. 513-419-7100 is the number to call. We're going back to the phone lines now. We have Basil on the line. Hi, Basil.
Hi there. So I just wanted to kind of quickly touch on, the recent legislation that's been passed requiring automobile drivers to give 3 feet of space or greater when passing a bicyclist. I'm curious, what are your thoughts on the enforcement of this legislation, and how can we kind of promote drivers giving that required space?
All right, Basil, we appreciate the call. We'll hang up and let the panel answer.
Basil, that's a great question. We need to see stronger enforcement of this. It can't just be something nice that we've written in to, you know, quell the concerns of the bicycling advocacy and bicycling communities at large. So we, you know, much as we need to see greater enforcement around issues of pedestrian safety, around issues of speed limits in business districts and high traffic areas, we also need to see enforcement of this.
It seems to me the challenge is that this sort of instance it can be hard to find and locate when and where that's happening. It's the same challenge that police deal with as far as other traffic enforcement issues go. And unlike with speeding hotspots, there might not be so obvious of a place to target when it comes to enforcing this kind of rule.
I think that's a great point, Pat, and it does require a little bit more creativity and a little bit more thoughtfulness. And I think it can also be approached from the education perspective, where we can help work on eliminating some of those needs for enforcement.
Next up is Jeremy. Hi, Jeremy. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
We're doing great. What's your question or comment?
Well, I live out near Big Bone Park in Union, Kentucky, and there's a lot of bicyclists that come out here in the evening times and park their cars at the park, and they use our local roads to ride loops around, which, I mean, I totally understand people wanting to come out and see the country. The problem is we have a local power plant that has 24-hour lime deliveries and other large 18-wheelers. So the cyclists really do create an unbelievable road hazard. It's very dangerous as it is to drive on these roads, you know, just in everyday life. But to come around the corner and have 6 or 7 bicyclists spread out, even at 35, 40 miles an hour, it's a deadly situation. And I don't really understand why, if it's, you know, there's all these places to ride, why come to an area where, you know, it's just so dangerous? That's all.
Jeremy, thanks for the call. We'll very quickly let you guys respond to that.
Well, Jeremy, I think you live in an area that has a beautiful landscape with some nice hills that people like to ride around. And I think what it boils down to is that, as roadway users, from a car perspective and from a biking perspective, we all need to just be aware of what's happening on the road. Don't drive distracted with your phone or certainly under the influence of anything. And also, remember to drive the speed limit and obey the traffic laws. And when we're driving slow, you can anticipate some of these things coming around the corner that you might not otherwise be able to.
Get a couple more comments in. Bill called. He says he rides a lot and says it's safer to move. Once, and says it's often easier to move out in front of traffic or move to the sidewalk because he just feels safer there. Ed emailed, says he uses the road instead of bike lanes because the lanes are always filled with debris and he feels trapped between the sidewalks. My last question before I let you all go today, these e-scooter riders, they actually are second-class citizens though, right? I mean, these are people that we
You'll never get any of us to say that on air.
I think that we're at a point in time, much as we were around the turn of the century when bicyclists were on the road around the same time that automobiles were, that we're building this culture as we drive it or ride it or scoot it. And it requires that we all be deeply cognizant of where one another are at and to really understand our roles in the traffic ecosystem.
May is National Bike Month. Find out details on all the activities planned at WVXU.org inside the Cincinnati Edition section. Our thanks to Tri-State Trails Director Wade Johnson, Queen City Bikes, Katie Vogel, Cincinnati Off-Road Alliance President Doug McClintock, and WCPO Transportation Reporter Pat LaFleur. Thanks for the chat today, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. I'm Michael Monks. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org.